Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, folks. This is Dave Schmidt. I'm your host here again tonight on the Cosmic Connections program. We want to thank everybody for joining us tonight. It's the April 14th program, and it's 9 p.m. here in my home in Florida. That means it's 6 p.m. on the West Coast, and wherever you may be, anywhere around the United States or the rest of the world, we want to thank you for joining the program tonight. And Blanca, it's nice to always to have you with us here, so why don't you go ahead and just say hi to everybody tonight, and we'll bring you in on the program.
Thank you. Hello, everybody. Thank you for joining us. And, of course, it wouldn't be spring, and I wouldn't be an Atlantan without saying we're covered in pollen over here. So, there we go.
Okay.
Otherwise, we're doing great.
Well, that's nice to know. Okay. Well, I've got this new background, so I know sometimes around my shoulders it kind of fades out a little bit. I'm trying to figure out how to get this done in an equitable manner, but we'll see. We're trying and testing in this process. But again, want to thank everybody for joining us tonight. There was no program last week. Yes, it was my birthday, so I took the week off, and as I sent out you in the newsletter that I had gotten a new sailboat. Well, I used to be a sailor. Remember, I lived in the Seattle area for 32 years, and I had a sailboat when I was up there, so I was very common with it. And once I had made the commitment that I was going to stay here longer in Florida and I was not going to move back to Arizona, I realized, you know, this is sailboat territory here in southern Florida. There's lots of boats here. So I've had it out twice. Yesterday I had it out into the ocean for the first time. So I'm looking forward to a lot of new wonderful adventures on the boat. But thank you. And then 2 weeks ago, we had a program with my guest, Joanna Carmichael. I remember she was doing a symposium where she had 8 guests, and I was one of those. Well, tonight I'm going to play the recording of that program. But before we go into that, let me just make a couple announcements. 2 workshops, Boston this coming Saturday, Phoenix 2 weeks after that. Now, I have been saying, if you want to be included in the first round of the currency exchange, I said what I've been saying consistently is that it's the people who attend the workshops are the ones that I can bring in. Now, I did fulfill most of my quota about a month ago, but there is a very, very high, I cannot promise this, but let's just say there's a very high probability that those who attend in Boston or Phoenix will still be able to be brought into the first round. Let me give you some information on that. I've been doing this for about 7 years. I have had lots of emails or phone calls about stories that the money's ready to be released. And I say, give me something tangible to back it up. Give me something where I can say, show me the money. What is really happening? What is tangible that is backing up that you're telling me the funds are going to be ready to be released, and they could never do it. So it was 7 years of stories and stories and stories. Well, 2 days ago, I got information that was backed up by very, very solid, tangible information from quality sources that funds are about ready to be moved. Yesterday, I spent probably 2 to 3 hours talking with multiple sources, and I now have 3 people that are credible, that I trust, that they are all telling me the same thing. These people don't associate with each other. They don't know each other, and that's what I look for. I look for multiple people telling me the same thing, and they're getting the same information, and yet it still has kind of what you call their individual idiosyncrasies within it. But they're confirming that, yes. And the biggest thing was I was able to verify within the last week there were meetings that took place within a specific city here in the United States where the principal people and players involved in releasing the currency exchange had meetings that went on for multiple days. Let's just say the people who are the decision makers on the currency money, exchange money being released, they were in meetings for multiple days. I have a firsthand contact that was in those meetings, and I have other firsthand contacts that were in the hotel where the meetings were taking place, but they didn't participate in the meetings, but they can verify that the meetings took place. And the information coming out of there is it's ready to go. Now, remember, about 4 weeks ago, I had reported on the information from Simon Parks and from my brokers that said the same thing, that it was the Chinese and the Americans that were making the decisions, and the Chinese were ready to release the funds, but the Americans had said no, not yet. And then for the American government, it's not the administration, but it's the military who's making the decision, and they weren't ready. Well, my understanding is both of those parties were in those meetings all last week. So, folks, all I can say is things look very, if that information is correct, we may be getting reports by next week that stuff is starting to move. Now, what does that mean for us? We're at the bottom of what you call the totem pole of where the funds are. So it could take sometimes a month or two to even make it down to my way, because it has to go through its various steps and stages and then be verified by the banks at each step along the way. And that sometimes can, you know, take, you know, each step can take sometimes up to a week. So, but that is the best, in the 7 years I've been doing this, that is probably the most tangible and best information that I had received. I'm not going to say absolutely yes, yes, yes. All I'm saying is that the information was very good, very solid, verifiable, and very tangible, that the money is ready to start moving. So that's that. And Blanca, any comments that you would like to make around that?
Well, that is very good news, Dave. In fact, there's two things. It sounds like you had various people who are actually participating in this, so it's not a rumor. So that's good, because there's people who are actually in the meeting and then people who knew that meetings were taking place. So that's good. And it sounds like the topic was very positive, and I could see you're being a little indirect about that. It's understandable. So that's good. So I encourage everyone who's ready to participate in this to just have good intentions and good energy that this can happen soon for us. The second thing you said, I want to make sure I – go ahead.
Well, I'm just saying also, I mean, if you attend, the Boston workshop on this coming Saturday or Phoenix 2 weeks after that, there's a very high probability that you will be involved in this release that's coming very, very soon, and I will be able to bring you into that. So that opportunity is still there. And
that's the second point I was – that's the second one. You had two big things there. The second, and I wanted to verify, you just did, I wanted to verify that I heard correct, because we had thought you had gotten your number that you wanted to expand the first round that was fulfilled, but now it sounds like you believe there's opportunity for more people to participate. It didn't sound like you were promising it, but you were just indicating that the opportunity was there. And it was favorable. Is that correct? Okay.
My broker is in contact with the Texas Processing Office about allowing me to bring in more currency. That's what it's about.
Excellent.
And so
excellent.
I have no control over that. They have not made a final decision other than the probability is very, very, very good. That's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So
will it work like this last group? Or will people need to get Dong and bring it, or
It will be like the last group, is that they won't send me their physical currency, because the currency, we're extending what is already there is what we're doing. And so the currency is already there, so that basically you're paying me a cash for it, and we're reimbursing the other folks that are releasing it is what it is. And, and there's a little bit more room to do that. Now, these people won't be able to come in at the same level as the last group, but still, hello? I mean, who wouldn't want a couple million dollars? So, you know.
I don't know that person.
I mean, who wouldn't want that? I mean, and that's what, you know, the type of return that it is. So, and
right.
That's about all I can say here on the air, but that's what's
right.
There. Yeah.
Well, goodness gracious. So make announcements your next workshop again so everybody can see if they can make it.
Yeah. And so also I mentioned on the program, I mean, on the preliminary information yesterday is that I've got the two workshops scheduled for Boston and Phoenix. And after that, there's a tentative for Toronto. But that's based around the COVID scenario. That is still not looking very good right now. I think I might have to, like, go into a quarantine for a period of time or show that I've had a vaccination. Folks, I'm not getting a vaccination. I'm sorry, I'm not going there. So I would just say Toronto does not look very good at this time is what I'm saying. Now, there is a possibility, though, we may be able to do one in Puerto Rico. But after that, I'm probably going to take a break for a while on the workshops. It may be another 2 or 3 months before I do another one. I don't know, but there's a probability that I might. Because especially of the fact that if the money starts to move, folks, I'm not doing workshops. That's an administration issue that I've got to take care of to make sure we can get everything out. So, yeah. So this is your opportunity, folks, the next couple of them. Couple workshops. So, yeah.
Good news. Good news.
Yep. So, okay, then anything you'd like to share with us before we go into the program tonight?
No, I think we put some really, really good news on the table there. And so I'm interested in listening to your interview.
Yeah. Somebody is here on the Facebook said that you can't hear me hardly at all. I'm not getting that from anybody else. So, Elizabeth, are you sure it's not on your computer? Because I'm not getting any problems at all that, hold on. I think I know what it is. I know what it is. Yes, I have the wrong microphone on. Watch this. Now that should change because I've changed to the appropriate microphone. It says the volume is lower. Okay, several other people have said that too. Folks, I forgot to turn on what is called my blue microphone, and I was coming with the microphone off the camera. Now, yes, way better. Okay, there we go. Thank you, Anna. I got it. Okay, folks, that was my fault. I forgot to change over to my good microphone that I'm accustomed to. So yes, the recent information might be down a little bit. It'd be a little bit tough to hear. I assume that, you know, if you turn up your volume on your own computer, you'll be able to pick that up. But it's basically, folks, we're very, very close to stuff starting to move. And these next two workshops are going to be your opportunity to still be involved in this first round if you want to do that. So I think we're ready to go then, Blanca. The program, what I'm going to do, as I said, is a couple of weeks ago, I had my friend Joanna Carmichael on the program, and she had a symposium where she brought in 8 people, and I was one of those. And this is the interview that I had with her. We kind of just let the information flow, and I end up talking a lot about what is called the deep state, the reality of them that are out there, why there is this power and control mechanism, and how it impacts us and stuff like that. So let's go to the program and let's join this. It's a little bit longer program, but we'll be back when the program's over. Thank you.
I'm letting you record. I'm not recording.
No, I'm recording. Okay. Hi, everybody, and welcome to another segment of Pharma to Dharma, unlocking the truth about the pharmaceutical industry, food, and the factory farm industry. Today, I have for you a very special guest who is a professional colleague and a dear friend, and I'm very excited to have him on the program today because I think he's going to give you some very interesting perspective on everything that's going on our planet and how it relates to big pharma and the factory farm industry and the food that we consume. I have today with me Dave Schmidt. He has a unique background, someone you wouldn't expect to be discussing metaphysical or higher energy issues combined with money and finance. Dave spent 20 years in politics, including 12 years in the Washington State Legislature, finishing as a state senator. The other side is Dave's spiritual and financial background. He has a BA in religion and an MA in theology, He spent 12 years in active church ministry prior to his years in politics, and he combines all of that with an original career in banking and finance, which includes 19 years as a market trader. He was a church minister and a politician who came to understand and have great empathy and communications with both sides on the political aisle. Now he is displayed in how he discusses the metaphysical and cutting-edge issues. Each week he has a newsletter and a corresponding radio program, and this info is sent to his followers. He conducts live workshops around the country, and which really answers the question, so why do we live in a world of such violence, wars, financial slavery, and dominion of power with others? Where do these behaviors and influences originate? So that's what we are going to talk about today, because his background has opened the door for a journey into understanding many of these questions. So welcome, my friend.
Well, thank you, Joanna. It's actually a wonderful pleasure to be here with you, and what a bio.
Sounds a little like mine, diverse and unique.
I know. Well, you know, it's been transitions that have gone on in my life that I didn't expect, that just one thing led to another. But I think what I really learned in my years there in politics, there's a real true deep state that is out there. What I teach...
Yeah, say that again, Dave. Say that again.
There's a very, very true deep state that is out there.
Thank you.
What I have clearly learned is that what I call, and I share this in my workshops, is that we live in a world of two worlds. There's the conventional world that is always presented to us. What we are taught in our schools and our education, what comes out of the media, the entertainment industry, and et cetera. And then there's the shadow world. That's the world that goes on in the shadows, behind the scenes, that the public doesn't know about. And that's where most of the power and control is. Most of the power and control of our world takes place in those shadow areas. But one of the things I really come to understand is that, yes, there's a shadow world, but out of that, I understand, you know, what is called, you know, the world of dualism. Whenever you have total dark in the shadows, you're also going to have dualistic energy of white hats as well. They're out there. They're both out there. The question is, who are you surrendering to? Who are you following? Who are you listening to? And who has the most influence on your life? But the shadow world, it's very, I mean, the dark hat cabals, they're very real. To me, it's an addiction. It's an addiction of power and control, and it's an addiction that is just as strong as any type of a drug. And not only is it an addiction, it's also motivated by a very subtle fear. They can be extremely powerful and extremely wealthy, but underneath it, they have this deep unconscious fear of someone becoming more powerful and wealthy than them and overtaking them. And that's why when you have a multi-billionaire, it's never enough. And when he's got 10 billion, he's got to have 20 billion. And when he has 20, he has to have 50 billion. And they don't share it with humanity. It's all about possessiveness of power and control. And it's a very, very deep addiction.
So this is the 1% elite that you're really talking
1%
about.
1% elite. And when I was in the state legislature in Washington, let's just say I got to be on a first name basis with the father of the man who was most recently the wealthiest man in the world. We won't say any names, but let's just say he has a very powerful, wealthy software company. I met with that man multiple times. I was on a first name basis with his father, and I've seen what's developed out of that. And it's just, you know, I can't believe it. And ironically, you got the two wealthiest people in the world are Jeff Bezos and Bill Gates, and they're both out of Seattle.
What's that about?
Where I lived for 32 years, you know, where I am now here in Florida. But you watch the power and control, and it seems to grab a hold of them, and they become so addicted to it. And it's like, you know, when you're worth $400 billion, how much more do you need? And, you know, they talk about that they're not going to give it to their children, they're going to give it away. Well, give it away now, because we live in a world that – half of the globe's population lives on less than $10 a day.
Mm-hmm.
That's called survival. You only have one issue. You're basically in a survival mode just to get enough food to live and not die and be able to have a roof over your shoulder and have some decent water. That's all you got and nothing more. And half the world's population lives that way.
Yeah.
And so, and you find this, the power and control. And I really appreciate your background when you say pharma to dharma. When you're in the state legislature, you're always having to raise money for your campaigns. And so you're always taking the political contributions. And the pharmaceutical companies, they never had any problem always giving us the max amount of a contribution because they always had lots of money to give. They were always some of the most powerful lobbyists because of the power of their money that they could give to the individual and also to what we call our caucuses, which is basically, you know, the campaign fund for our group. They had so much money just to be able to give away for political power and influence.
Yeah, and I mean, I did research for over 20 years, and really only about 11% goes to research. I mean, yes, it costs a lot of money to get a drug to market and to do all the studies, but they pay way more in lawsuits and lobbying.
Yes, so they do. And I saw it, and I experienced it in the lobbying side. I mean, it wasn't uncommon that they were always setting up appointments for me, and, you know, so... You see the power and control in politics and how it's the power and control of money. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about, you know, Congress, which has 435 members in it. The vast majority of those members are just good, everyday people who are there trying and wanting to do a good job. But what most people don't realize, you know, you take the 435 in our House and then the 100 in the Senate, of those 535, there's five of them that run the show. Five of the 535. Those five have what you would call veto power of almost anything that comes through them. If you want to get anything done, you got to put it in the form of a bill and pass a law. And usually there's always some sort of a monetary expenditure that's tied to it. So in the House, you have the Speaker, then you have the majority leader who basically approves what bills get to come to the floor to be voted on. And then you have your finance or appropriation chair committee chairman who determines what gets funded and where the money goes. Those three people, they don't like you. They'll say, sorry, you're out of luck. So you got 435 members in Congress, and yet those three have the ability to control anything that comes to the floor to get voted on in its final purpose so it can be implemented and done. And besides them and the committee chairs, the rest of them are just kind of seat fillers, in so many words, in the power of the process. So you got the three in the House, and then you have two in the Senate. The Senate Majority Leader, and then the finance chairman, the same thing. Those five people have the ability to veto almost anything that comes before them. Mm-hmm. And they can say, no, this bill isn't going to get voted on. No, this item isn't going to be going to get an appropriation in the budget. And without that, you're just a seat filler. You're just a talker. That's all you are, is just a seat filler, talker, member of Congress. And that's where the majority of them were. And I experienced that at the state level. Now, it's not as strong at the state level as it is the federal level, but I still saw it. I saw the power and the control of money by, you know, those same five people at the state level who would determine what happens and what doesn't happen, what gets funded and what doesn't. And that's the reality of the political system that we have here in the United States. So,
like everything else, nothing is as it seems.
Yeah, and so if you have lots of money, you have the ability to have a very strong voice in that process. And, you know, through the years, I've been trying to think, how can you get money out of politics? It's very, very difficult. They've talked about, you know, taking the money out of campaigns. Well, then how are you going to let people run for office without having any money for campaigns, without people getting to know who they are? You know, when you've got a congressional district, the average congressional district has almost 700,000 people in. Well, how do you get your name out? How do they get to know you? How do you get to expose yourself? So then when it comes back to again, then it just ends up, if when it comes to the voter, if they don't know anything at all about the challenger, they're just going to keep voting in the incumbent. The only thing I can think of that really kind of solves that power and control problem is to see some term limits on the members of Congress. I would like to see that, but that will never come from Congress themselves. They will never term limit themselves. The way to do that is what is called a constitutional convention that comes from the states. The states can call it. What we learned as state legislators, we learned and we were taught this, is that you don't realize as a state legislator, you are one of the most powerful people in this country, because the basis of our government is based on the Constitution. Congress cannot amend the Constitution. They can only propose an amendment that then comes to the state legislatures to vote on. But the state legislatures can come together and call a constitutional convention and can amend the Constitution on the spot without the authority of Congress or the president. So that's where the real power is. Now, it takes a collective power to do that. That's where the real power and control is.
But then aren't they also motivated by money and financial incentives that they're probably not too anxious to give up to vote, you know?
Well, it depends on how it is. See, here's what's different at the state legislatures. In Congress, you're talking about people in a full-time job. That's their full-time job. That's their full, complete financial support for how they get their money. In the states, of the 50 states, there's only about 8 or 9 that have a full-time legislature. All the other states, the legislature is a part-time job, and for some of them, it's hardly even that. I mean, you take the state, I think it's of Massachusetts or New Hampshire. They've got 400, a little tiny state like New Hampshire has 435 members in their state house. So you're elected as a state house member, and you've only got 7,000 or 8,000 people in your legislative district, and this is no job for you at all. I mean, you got to have another full-time job just to be able to do this. Where I was in Washington State, you know, they called it a part-time job. In reality, it was a full-time job, a part-time pay is what it was. I could see we're only in session for 2 to 3 months a year is what it is. And so there's... It's a really, at the state level, it's a really true what I would call a citizen-based legislature. The vast majority of the people are everyday people that come from everyday jobs, you know, and they have other jobs and they have families, but it comes back to who has the power and control. Those five, it's a full-time job and more for those five people.
Well, you know, you've really explained a lot about... you know, why things are the way they are in big pharma, and especially the farm animal industry. And as you know, the animals are near and dear to my heart. And as I have learned more about the farm factory industry, I'm amazed at the people who have been working tirelessly to get the right animals, and that animals not mistreated and slaughtered in humanely and everything like that. And people have been doing this for decades. And it's amazing to me that we're not farther along, but this kind of explains it, that, you know, between the big pharma and the farm animal lobby, that it's so hard to get anything done, you know, for the animals, because it's not profitable.
It's not. Well, when you look at, you know, the animals that are basically used for sources of food, it's not about treating them as an animal. It's about treating them as a food source. And they're kept in utter... unhealthy, unlivable conditions, and they're only basically, you know, propagated to be able to be slaughtered to be turned into food, and it's all based on profit. And you see, if it's not the power of money for the individual in politics, then it's the power of money for the companies, the profit of the companies. It's all driven by profit. How well can you make stock grow? And you know, if you take care of animals in a humane way and how you're producing your food, you can't stay in business because you can't be in competition with those that don't. We're starting to see some changes in that. I'm noticing in the dairy industry, you're starting to see that, you know, this was milk that came from cows that were grass-fed in open fields, you know.
Supposedly, yeah. But they still have to impregnate them to get that.
I know. And I know that. I get it. And that's what they say. You know, and even it's amazing the cover-up in the food industry. If they say it's organic, it may be organically grown, but it's not organically processed.
That's right.
Not organically processed. Living in Washington State, you know, one of the biggest industries, obviously, you know, was the agriculture business, because Washington is the apple capital state.
Right, right. Right.
And it's always amazing what they would do when they would grow their apples. You know, you grow an apple and you pick it in the fruit season and you put it into this cold storage where it's fed with chemicals to keep it in a so-called fresh state and covered with wax. And they'll stay in these warehouses sometimes for 2 years before they release them to market.
Wow, really?
Oh, yeah. Because it's a cold storage chemical-based facility that shuts everything down and kind of, it doesn't freeze it, but it chemically acts like it's been frozen. So it can be kept in what is a so-called fresh state. And you get these nice, red, delicious apples. They look very, very, very nice, but they sure aren't organic and fresh.
Wow, that's amazing. I didn't even know that.
When you live there, you can tell the world of difference between an apple that was purchased in store and an apple that was picked fresh off the tree.
Sure.
A world of difference.
Sure.
Not only in that, now, living in the Puget Sound, the fishing industry, same thing with salmon.
Yeah.
Salmon bought in a store versus the salmon that was caught that morning out of, you know, the Puget Sound, and you had it for dinner that night. A world of difference in the taste and the quality. So it tells you what's the food industry, it's all about profit more than it is quality.
Absolutely. And that's why we have people are fat, sick, dying. We have cancer. Autoimmune diseases, things we never heard of 2 decades ago.
You know,
and you could be doing what you think is the purest, you know, the purest diet, the purest water. You could be doing everything right. I went through it with my dog. I did everything right. I didn't vaccinate him. I didn't, you know, he got fresh food and he died of cancer because, you know, neighbors put glyphosate on their lawn.
Yeah.
So, you know, and we are ingesting. And we're breathing that, and pharmaceuticals are in our water supply. So
you know, that's something, you know, where I'm growing up and learning and understanding. I should say I'm maturing and understanding myself. And I really learned how to always be keeping my body going through a detoxing state, because who knows what I'm taking in. So for years, I had no idea about you need to be cleaning your colon. I never had a professional colon cleanse until 6 years ago in my life. And I had all this buildup of colon, you know, in my colon. I had no idea until I started educating myself. So I work at always keeping that clean, you know, making sure I'm always flushing myself out and detoxing. And I'm becoming much, much, much more careful about what I eat. So, but I do have to admit, I still enjoy my great hamburger now and then.
Oh, dear. I can't believe you said that. Well, I'm going to work on that with you.
Okay. I won't call it an addiction, but it is what it's called. It's an old pleasure.
I understand. Well, we're going to talk right after.
I know. I am totally starting to weed myself off of red meat. But, you know, it's an awakening process.
It is.
That we all go through, and different people wake up at different times in their lives, and I think that's what's happening. And if I can make a shift on that awakening process with what's happening in our country right now politically, I know that the mainstream media says there was no corruption in the election. I thought, no. Excuse me. When I was in the legislature, we all would take on issues where we became what are called the experts for our caucus. My expertise was the administration of elections. I knew elections inside and out.
Okay.
I was asked to run for our Secretary of State because the retired Secretary of State said I was the best member of the legislature to be the next president. I know elections. There was so much fraud in that election. There was so much corruption that went on in that election. And they did it in a manner that it didn't show up in the auditor's offices or the election processing offices, because it was all done electronically by computers outside. The problem was they had these computers, these counting machines tied to the internet, which they were never supposed to do, and that gave access to basically I think we're going to see over a period of time the deep corruption of the Dominion election software systems that was there. So what do we do? We've got basically a president that isn't really the president. And then we've got others who, you know, I mean, Donald Trump goes out and has rallies and 30 to 50,000 people show up and Joe Biden doesn't even come out of the basement.
Right.
And then yet he, you know, gets more votes. And it's the corruption of the system.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the awakening process, part of our maturing process as a collective is it takes a crisis to wake us up.
Always, right?
That's the benefit of the crisis. And I think what we're going to see over the coming months is that all of this stuff is going to start. I want to be careful how I use this term, but I guess I'd call it people who were asleep. We've all had different times in our lives when we've been asleep. We've all been there. And it's the crisis that wakes you up. That's what happened with me. I was just going through my everyday life, doing my job as a legislator, family guy, and everything else until I got bit really hard by the financial crisis in 2008. I finished the legislature in 2006. I went into a real estate development project. The banks were fighting over who were going to give myself and my partner the loan because the project was so solid. I was about 8 months away from making over $700,000, and then the 2008 financial crisis hit. The banks, the loan, where the banks were out of business. And I got bit. I mean, I lost everything I had. I had put everything I had financially into that project. I ended up basically having to file bankruptcy and losing my home to foreclosure. But what that did, I thought, wait a minute. I've been a professional market trader. These people on Wall Street should have seen this company coming. They are the best financial experts in the world. And I was always listening to CNBC because they were never talking about this crisis. If they did, it was a little tiny bit here and there. They hardly ever talked about it. I thought, what in the world was going on? So that's when I started doing my research.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out, and if I can be very frank, I realized, those bastards. This was a planned pump and dump by the cabal financial controllers. Pump up the debt, crash the economy. Millions of everyday people like me and others were hurt by it, but they become more wealthy and more powerful and have more control. And that's what they do. That's what they do in these financial worlds and how they run and control all this stuff. I think we're going to start seeing that the general public is going to start waking up to what's really going on out there. And that's why sometimes we have to allow what we'd call the black hats to have control for a period of time. Because we're now living in a world where they can't run and hide anymore. I can remember a time in the legislature when we didn't have email. And I think one of the best, what I call gifts to us, has been the power of the internet. Because the internet has allowed everyday people like you and me to discover the truth. And what I call the shadow world can't hide with the internet anymore. And these black hat power controllers can't hide anymore. And they're being discovered, and people are waking up and discovering the truth of what's really going on. Now, we're in a transition period because a lot of these people feel powerless. Because, okay, it's out there, but what can I do? What can I do?
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I share what you can do is make sure you stay and rise above all of the chaos, all of the drama, and stay in your personal place of integrity. One of the greatest new things we're beginning to learn, and this is coming out of some of the really wonderful scientists that are understanding the power of quantum physics with human consciousness, the power of our thoughts. We're starting to understand how powerful our thoughts are. Now, there's different terms for this, but what I understand is that our thoughts, literally our brains, when we think, puts out these little tiny electromagnetic particles called memes. This kind of operates on the same basis as how does a cell phone operate wirelessly? How are you and I doing this Zoom meeting here, and it's all happening wirelessly because, you know, I'm in Florida and you're in Pennsylvania. The brain has the same capability. So it puts out these memes, and the memes then combined with the basically the electromagnetic particles at the quantum level. And then they create the energy, which creates everything that we experience and everything that we have. Some of these best scientists are now saying that we're starting to understand and discover that it's human consciousness with quantum physics that literally creates everything that we experience and everything that we have. Einstein himself said, there is no such thing as matter. Matter doesn't exist. Nothing in the world is physical. Science, quantum physics, has shown us that we live in a world that's a holographic illusion. It's all nothing but massive, oscillating, fast-moving energy. It's all that it is. But what affects that fast-moving, oscillating energy? Human thought. So as we see this world of corruption, as we see this world of greed, it's really, well, let me take a step back. So we have this fast-moving, accelerating energy, and Nikola Tesla always said, if you want to understand the universe, get to understand energy, frequency, and vibration. Because everything in the universe is energy that has a frequency and a vibration to it. Low vibration energy thoughts create low vibration energy experiences that we experience. High vibration energy thoughts create the high vibration energy experiences that we experience. So what's extremely important is when you observe what's going on out there in this world that's basically a mess, it's corrupt, there's this cabal controlled, we can call that the dark world. It's extremely important you don't observe it and judge it with dark thoughts. Because if you lower your vibrational frequency of your thoughts, you're not going to stop it. You're actually going to feed it and let it keep going.
Right.
You rise above it with your own powerful vibrational thoughts. And obviously the most powerful high-frequency vibrational thought is the frequency of love. It's extremely powerful. And this comes back to my theology degree, where Jesus was the master at that. He was the absolute master. We can talk about religion from the place of the church, but most of that is hypothetical. Most of that comes from a place where it was manufactured for power and control. But we separate the individual, the person of Jesus, of who he was and what he did, from what comes out of the theological church side. You're seeing a man who understood this. He understood the power of the frequency of love, and everything he did was just simply from the frequency of love. He learned to live that way, and he learned to let go of all of his fear, all of his judgment, all of his anxiety, all of his need for power and control. He was totally in touch and in harmony with what you would call the frequency of love that is within this universe. And that's what gave him the ability to heal as he did. And if we really want to see what I would see the curtailing power of the pharma industry is when we would learn how to truly do the things that he did. He himself said, everything that I do, you can learn how to do this as well. There's a book that is an autobiography book because it's very, very powerful. He talks about the experiences he went through. And he said he had this life-changing event, and it just happened to happen when in the Bible with the experience of when he was baptized by John the Baptist. Now, his experience with John had nothing to do with that. That was just the moment. But it was like he had this massive kundalini rush of energy come over his whole body. And his whole body was vibrating and shaking. And literally what was happening, he was going through a complete shift of energy, frequencies, and vibrations that were coming into his body. and it shifted everything within him. And he said from that point on, he was able to see the quantum world. You know, if you've seen the movie The Matrix, and you see the Mr. Smith out there in his quantum form of nothing but a bunch of, you know, digital data bits and everything. In so many words, Jesus was saying, that's what happened to me. When I saw somebody who was sick, had a disease, had a physical problem in their body, it was like I could turn on this quantum sight and I could look into them, because the whole body, we're basically energy beings is what we are. So our whole body has energy vibration to it. He could look into it and he could see all the energy vibration in the body. But the spot that was injured, the vibration was lower and the frequency was lower and the vibration was less and it was darker where everything else was light. And he said, when he said that I am the light of the world, the quote that comes out of the Bible, he literally says, I have this energy of the universal light coming through me. He would focus, and then he would just reach out and touch the person in that spot, and this massive energy would move through him into that spot in their body, and it would restore the energy frequency to its natural state. That's where real healing takes place. And what we live is, because we live in this world where we think the world is physical, we place ourselves being dependent upon these pharmaceutical drugs for our well-being.
Absolutely.
I think we're going to see a shift and change where this stuff is going to start happening, but it's not going to happen overnight. It takes a total, complete shift in consciousness. But I wouldn't be surprised if in 30 to 40 years, we see more and more of this, because it's no longer just in the mystical state. It's now in what is called complete state of scientific physics. It can be understood by, you know, PhDs in physics, how all this works.
Right.
And because there are different, you know, professional PhDs in physics that are now espousing this and talking about it.
Well, and they're talking about what yogis have known for thousands of years.
Yes.
You know, the Vedas have talked about for thousands of years.
Absolutely.
Because of the internet, as you said, you know, it's shaking loose the cognitive dissonance that has pervaded. And so it, just briefly explain how the mainstream media fits into this, the narrative of the power and the control and the greed, and that people are absorbing this and buying into that narrative because they're watching TV and, you know, during lockdown, instead of going within, they watch, you know, you've been to watch Netflix. And I think, also, you know, I know you talk about how, because we're basically financial and emotional slaves, that you, there isn't the time to work on yourself, to connect, to meditate, to do yoga, to do the inner work that is required for the, you know, for consciousness to shift. And, you know, can you speak to that?
Sure. Well, let me take a step back. And first of all, realize that the lives that we live, 95% of our daily life is lived from the subconscious. And that is the mind that has a lot of memory to it, and it's programmed by past experiences and emotions and things that we've gone through. For most of the time that I was in the Christian world, I didn't believe in reincarnation. Until I started doing my really deep research, and then I began to understand that modern Western Christianity is the only faith-based system in this world that doesn't believe in reincarnation. Indigenous cultures and tribes for thousands and thousands of years have always believed in it. And now physics is beginning to show, yes, that's the case. The body that we have is just a physical shell. Underneath that is the essence of the soul, which lives forever. But the subconscious mind is programmed from those soul experiences. So what we have within us is thousands of years of old memory still within the subconscious mind that we have to reprogram. Now, the power of the media. What I share in my workshops is that there are three areas that you find that we get information from, that what I would call, again, the cabal, the dark side, the dark hands, have power and control over. And those are the three areas that we take in most of our information throughout the day. One is our education system. Okay. How many years we spend in education, whether it's K through 12 or going on and getting our advanced degrees. The other is the media industry, what comes out of the news media that is fed to us. And the third is the entertainment industry. Those three basically feed to, if we're living in a conventional world and we're not taking time to reprogram ourselves and to reshift, but we're just living in everyday normal conventional life, those three are programming 95% of our everyday lives and telling us what to do. Who's the real deep, what you call the dark cat power controllers? It's always been known that one of those big families is the Rockefellers. What is the most powerful education system in our country? The National Education Association, the Teachers Union. You don't get it past the Teachers Union, it doesn't happen. Guess who started the NEA, the National Education Association? The Rockefeller Foundation. Because they knew if we can control public education will be used to basically produce slaves, workers, for the wealthy and the elite corporations. It's not about awareness, advancement, understanding, stuff like that. Public education isn't about that.
Well, we can thank Rockefeller for the medical education and why it's
right.
So difficult for doctors and nurses to have a viewpoint of holistic medicine, when really it's all about holism and in being healthy multidimensionally, not just, you know, treat the symptom, not the cause, and then big pharma gets the benefit of that.
And then if you go to the entertainment industry, I mean, look at the movies and the TV shows that there's just massive, massive slaughter and killing going on. And who in our everyday lives has ever experienced that? I've never seen a person killed in my life, never. But yet, I can turn on the TV or watch a movie and I'll see it 100 times in one day. What's that doing? What's that doing to the subconscious mind? What is it feeding? And that's only a small part of the big, expansive power control that they have, because we listen to it. And then the third thing is the media, the news industry, that feeds us, again, you know, to quote Trump, fake news. It's not realistic. And I think what we're seeing it now more than ever before. If you're a person who is awake and you understand, you're seeing this massive contrast that is going on in the media industry versus the freedom of the internet. And that is extending to Facebook, the YouTube, the Google, the Twitters, that are beginning to censor what we're doing here.
Right.
I mean, it would be interesting if people from Twitter end up watching this video if they don't take it off.
I know.
My weekly program that I do, I always end up putting it out there as a YouTube video. I've already had YouTube pull two of my videos. Delete them. Because I was talking about the elections and politics from an elections expert,
And I've had posts taken off about vaccines and trying to shed light on that, whole issue.
So if you control those three areas, you control humanity. But here's what's happening again. The internet, the power of the internet is letting us bypass their power and control of their form of the conventional world. And we're learning the truth for ourselves. Look at this. You and I would not be here without the power of the internet. And we wouldn't be able to share this without the power of the internet to counter what they have. So how do we overcome this? It's going to take a long time, some years of reprogramming 95% controlled subconscious mind. The subconscious mind is basically like a massive computer. And your hard drive is like your DNA is like a massive hard drive where all those data bits of energy of memory are stored. But it's a program. And a program can be rewritten and reprogrammed. So you have to start reprogramming how you think. positive, strong, powerful energy frequency thoughts. All you have to do is start living that way, thinking that way, allowing yourself to look at life that way. I had this one quote that I share in my workshop. It says, to reprogram the mind, you have to start seeing the world through the eyes of the love of God versus the eyes of the human ego. And that's how you reprogram. You see, Jesus was the master. He did that. He knew how to totally let go of all of the old egoic programming that was within him and totally focus on nothing but the love of God and how love is the most powerful energy that there is in the universe that's out there. And that is what shifts and changes people. When we as a collective start reprogramming ourselves, thinking in terms of love and compassion, humility and forgiveness toward however we view whatever comes up in front of our face, that's when we really start shifting and changing our world. And for most, it's going to take a number of multiple lifetimes to do that. But you carry the memory that I'm creating in this lifetime will carry forward to the next. And it's that memory. See, that's how do you describe a little five-year-old that sits down at the piano and starts playing Mozart? Past life memory that has come forward is what it is. It's past life memory and programming. Because that was probably something that was very, very strong in their past life, that strong energy carries forth into this life. And that's how you see these children doing absolutely astounding things as 5- and 7-year-olds that accomplished adults can't do after 20 years of working at it. It's a past life carry forward is what it is.
Absolutely. And I mean, I do that work. I do past life regression. And I mean, it's absolutely amazing what can come up in these sessions. And, you know, what your natural affinity is to different things. You know, like I'm drawn to India and Ayurveda comes very naturally to me. Why would it? I wasn't raised in that environment. You know, meditation and yoga and everything wasn't a part of my growing up or childhood. But then you get pulled and drawn to different things. And it's always because you've been there before.
It's familiar.
So.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Okay. Well, one of the things that I've learned in my life is I've always had this very, very strong attraction to the writings of A Course in Miracles. And that was a book that came out in the late 70s. And if you understand it, it's basically the true teachings of Jesus. And I thought, why was I always attracted to that? And it was in a session that I had with another wonderful, gifted, and talented lady who can do these channeling sessions. And she said, you were attracted to him because in a past life, you were there with him. You lived with him there in Palestine during that time and era. And so that's why you always had this very deep attraction to him, because you were there with him and you experienced him firsthand in what would be called a physical life. You experienced his love and compassion and you saw him, you know, at work. So that's why A Course in Miracles always just flows very easily for me, just as you say that the practices of Ayurveda and coming out of India flows for you, because obviously you experienced past life.
Yeah.
Part of the memory flows forward. And we all have it. It's just a matter of learning where it is.
We have to access. I have to point this out because as you were talking about A Course in Miracles, there's a window behind me and the light just and illuminated my screen. That happened a couple times while we were talking.
A Course in Miracles teaches that we live in a world of what is called dualism or dualistic consciousness, separation consciousness. And separation consciousness, thought patterns, is what creates almost all the problems in our world. Jesus was a master of getting past the dualistic consciousness and moving into a consciousness of oneness, singularity is what he had done. And what A Course in Miracles says about itself is the only true teaching out there that is pure non-dualistic in its teaching. It doesn't compromise that. It just doesn't compromise. That's, at the end of the day, it's basically getting past what is called our separation consciousness. We live in a world, again, everything is energy. All energy is united and connected. It's all connected. energy operates at its best when it's connected with everything around it and has a flow to it. And then what we do with our thoughts is we take this energy and we pull it apart and separate it, separation consciousness. So when you start separating it, it creates the dysfunction. It creates the problems. It creates all the, what you call the negative thinking, the problems of our world, the hatred, etc. All that is a part of separation consciousness versus the consciousness of unity and oneness and love. And that's why we live in the world we live in.
Well, and I think, you know, I think it's important to say that this is why it makes working on ourselves so important.
Yes.
Because I know that when I'm meditating, when I'm doing yoga, when I'm reading spiritual, inspirational material and absorbing it, I'm affecting the collective. And to try to accelerate that process makes my work all the more important on myself, because I know I'm helping the collective by doing that. So it's like you work on healing yourself and you help heal the collective.
Yes. And you really touched on a point there, and that's the importance of being willing to do your self introspection and your self work. That means turn off the TV.
That's right.
Turn off the mainstream news.
Right.
Turn off the entertainment industry. That does nothing for you except to keep you in that lower energetic state where you will stay stuck for the rest of this life, and you will experience a world of pain, misery, fear, and others dominating and controlling you, because that's what that produces. You have to let that stuff go and learn how to rise above it and do your own self-work. And when you're doing that self-work, when something comes up in front of your face, that is a oh crap moment, to put it bluntly, trust the fact that that's a gift.
That's right.
It's not a problem. It's the crisis that comes up before you that says, this is an opportunity. This is something that's coming from your subconscious mind. It's an opportunity to clear and heal that old stuff. As you face into it, if you look at it with fear, if you look at it with attack, if you look at it with anxiety, you'll keep it going because you're feeding it. If you look at it with love, forgiveness, healing, that's the reprogramming process. So the crap comes up in front of our face is our ability to reprogram the subconscious mind.
That's right. That's
so
great.
When those things happen throughout the day, look at them as a gift. That's exactly what they are.
Well, and you've trained yourself to do that. I've trained myself to do that. You still get caught, but it is truly a practice, and it takes, you know, weeks, months, years, whatever, and it will be ongoing.
I've been working on this now for about 8 to 10 years of my life, and that's why my life is the bio intro that you made. I'm not the normal guy from the background that I, you know, a politician, a banker, and et cetera, to be talking about this kind of stuff, but it's because I've done my own inner work. And that's what I've learned and discovered. And it's like, yes, we reincarnate, but sometimes we feel like we live multiple lifetimes in one physical incarnation. And this one, it's like it's a world that's so different than what my life was 10 years ago. It's like I'm not even the same person I was back then.
Yeah, as is mine. I can totally relate. And like you, have went through a great deal of hardship, a great deal of financial turmoil, Those were the things that took me down the rabbit holes that showed me the truth. I mean, I had a friend who was losing her house and was telling me about it, and I didn't believe her. I'm like, the bank wouldn't do that. You know, how is that possible? But I could pay my mortgage, you know, at that time. So, you know, when things are going along, you know, just fine, and you're kind of blissfully unaware, you really, it's not the incentive to go look for anything deeper, because you're content. But it's that discontent and the challenges that force you to go deeper and look deeper. And we both have been down some rabbit holes.
When I lost everything I had in 2008 and 2009, and that started my looking and searching. And in 2012, I moved from, you know, the Seattle area down to Arizona, and everything seemed to be going good for about 6 months, and then my job prospects totally fell apart.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, what in the world is going on here? And everything inside of me, you know, the Holy Spirit inside of me was saying, trust this process. And I had come to the point, I was one day away from being homeless, and I only had $56 to my name. I had thrown the tent and sleeping bag in the back of my car, and I was ready to go out and sleep in the wilderness. I had no money, no place to go. But inside, everything was screaming, trust this process. That was the crisis that came up in front of my face. I said, what am I going to do? And am I going to keep myself at peace and trust this process as I'm hearing from my own intuitive self, or am I going to operate out of fear and anxiety and go do something that I shouldn't do? And that's where life really started changing for me, for where I am now. That was the turning point. I came out of that, and that's when I began to discover, you know, what I'm involved in now on a financial basis, and boom. And let's just say, I mean, I'm at the point now where I don't have any financial worries or concerns. I don't have any at all. I just, money finds me whenever I need it. It just seems to, and I'm truly experiencing the power of your thoughts, power of the law of attraction, that when you keep yourself at peace, keep your thought vibration strong and high, and you allow yourself to be peaceful through the process, that attracts to you the energy that you want for the things that you want. The like energy attracts like energy. Simple physics. It's all about simple physics. It's not about a bunch of woo-woo metaphysical thinking.
Physics is metaphysics.
Everything is. Metaphysics. And then we get that, but you know.
Yeah. Well, and it also shows you that you can be peaceful in the midst of crisis, that you can have that going on in your life, you know, because life continues to happen. It's not that, oh, if you meditate, you become peaceful because you've done your inner work. I mean, or your life, you know, is perfect because you've done your inner work. This stuff continues to happen to bring us our lessons and to keep going deeper in our spiritual progress. But throughout that process, being able to stay peaceful through it is such a gift. And to keep your vibration, you know, as you say, with love and forgiveness and compassion and joy and serenity and, you know, all the gratitude, you know, it's another very high vibrational energy. And to stay in those places, we dip down, of course we dip down, but then it's up to us to bring ourselves back up.
Yeah. So
my friend, it's like we're almost at the hour mark.
It is. I was gonna share a few other things. I was gonna mention about A.R. Yeah. Gordon and the Learn process. Can I do that?
Absolutely. Please.
There's a man that I've become acquainted with. His name is A.R. Gordon. Now, he was a man that lived quietly in his work, but he was considered by some to be the brightest and smartest man in the world. Absolute super genius. He and his colleagues were the masters at understanding, you know, quantum energy and consciousness. And he's now written a couple books about that are now starting to come out. But what they had learned was how to develop a process called LEARN. Now, that's an acronym, Light Encoded Reality Matrix. They had the ability to make something appear right out of nothing, right in front of them, instantly. You wanted an apple, put your hand out there, and in 15 seconds you had an apple sitting on your hand. Mm-hmm. And it's all physics. It's all physics. They were masters at this. This is, again, what we're going to start learning. We're going to start learning and understanding this LEARN process of how consciousness creates those things that we want. There's a story about him and his colleagues went and visited some Tibetan monks up in, you know, the Himalayas. And they sat down for lunch. And the monks were all on one side of the table, and Gordon and his colleagues were on the other side of the table. And again, it comes back to the indigenous cultures understood this stuff, and these monks understood it. So they were sitting there, and they said, okay, the monks said, it's lunchtime. So they went quiet, closed their eyes, started doing some slight humming, and then boom. Boom, their lunches just start appearing out of nowhere right in front of them. They open their eyes and they smile. Borden turns to his colleagues, and he says, gentlemen, should we show them? They go quiet. They close their eyes. Boom, boom, boom. Their lunches show up right in front of them. This is a true story.
And
these monks go ecstatic. They said, you understand this. You get it. He says, we are the physicists, the PhDs, who know how it works. We understand the physics behind this, and this is what we're ready to start sharing with the world. And his stuff is starting to come out. And I think this is what we're going to see coming out in maybe 10, 20, 30 years. But right now, there's a small group that needs to learn it and understand it and practice it. Borden's actually written a book. It's entitled Be Like God. He says, we are the physicists who can understand how Jesus did all of his miracles. And you can learn to do it too. Anybody can learn to do it if they're willing to do the work. It takes work. It's very concentrated work and reprogramming of your subconscious mind to make it happen, but it's possible. It's one of the things I'm working on in my life now at this time. So, yeah.
Well, it's possible and it's worth it.
Yes.
Worth it. So because we continue to live like we're living in the complete chaos and insanity, and continue to hurt each other and the planet and animals, where we can do the inner work and start to change it and really take our power back in so many ways. With our health, with our finances, everything.
In one of his books, Borden talks about why should you be fearful of this complete dark power controlled world when you can take out five of your friends to a five-star restaurant and just make $100 bills appear right in front of you to pay for it.
Right.
Because you can do that if you want to. And there are some of us that know how to do that. But they weren't attached to the power and the money. Power and money didn't mean anything to them.
Right.
They let go of that entirely, and there was no attachment to them. So they didn't have to think twice about, oh, I need $10,000 to do this. Because they understood it was all part of the collective, part of the universe, and it was a gift from the universe. It's not about selfishness, greed, and power and control. Mm-hmm. We were able to totally rise above that.
Yeah. And we live in an abundant universe. And we do. That proves it. So in the last moment, how do people find you?
Well, my business, you can't quite see it there on the banner behind me, but it's called The Cosmic Connections. And my website is called thecosmicconnections.wordpress.com. You can go there and you want a little click to sign up and you get my newsletter, and then you'll hear everything I talk about and what I do and what I talk about in my workshops. And you've been to my workshops, so you know what I do there. And you know that a lot of what I've shared today is what I do, some of the things I talk about there. And then the other thing is my email is daveschmidt@msn.com. Send me an email.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Okay.
Well, I can't thank you enough, Dave. The time always goes by fast. So I can't thank you enough for doing this. I'm really excited to have you on my summit. Because I think it's going to be a great addition, and thank you.
Well, I should say thank you for what you're doing as well. I know you do wonderful work. We have lots of good side conversations, and I'm always amazed how much we're on the same page with so much stuff. Mm-hmm. We've been there, we get it, we understand it. You and I can carry on conversations and go on forever, and we're just like we're reading each other's mind. It's always nice. So. And you do a wonderful job. Thank you very much for what you do.
Oh, thank you, Dave, and for what you do as well. Yes, the workshops are awesome, so definitely check Dave out. We are going to these summits will be continuing after this first one, the inaugural one. My intention is to keep it going, so I'm very excited about that. And this is how we find each other. You know, when you go to a workshop like Dave, you know, you're sitting in a room with like-minded people who get it or at least want to get it. Just like when I go to a farm sanctuary, I'm sitting with, you know, vegetarians and vegans and people that care about animals. And so you're in good company, and that's how we're going to find each other. So, you know, definitely check Dave out.
Keep your influence on me and I'll get rid of my hamburgers.
You know that's coming.
Thank you. Thank you, Joanna.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thank you. Okay.
Okay, yeah. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, folks, for listening to that program tonight. You'll see there's a slight delay between the audio and the video on that, and when I put out the recorded program, I might be able to fix that and change that at that time. But it's just a great conversation. I think what you're seeing there in my time that I have with Joanna is kind of a recap or an overview of how I see things, how I view life, and what's important to us, and where I feel we're going, and the things that we get to do together collectively. So, with Blanca, with that, why don't you come on and then share your thoughts and comments about what we did there?
I really enjoyed it, Dave, so I'm glad you decided to share it, because maybe not everybody had a chance to hear it on the summit she was doing, and so this was a nice chance for us to hear it, and it was a great conversation. That's, I think, why it was fun to listen to. What I enjoyed the most was you were both talking, and of course at the beginning you were sharing from your own experience in politics and your own even life experience of the reality called the deep state and the reality called, you know, the undue and over influence of money on our lives. And so and you covered a lot of things that people would consider heavy topics and maybe hard to digest, but it's all true, and now we're seeing it more than ever. It's coming out. I mean, if anyone still doubts that there's a deep state, they are not paying attention. And but it's funny how after all that, both of you said, yes, so that's what's going on in the Matrix, but what's really important is what's going on with us and the inner work that we're doing and the frequency that we're maintaining. And so I really enjoyed that turn in the conversation, because what we talk about a lot when we talk about what's going in the Matrix is phenomena, right? But what's really real is what's going inside of us and how we're interpreting and experiencing that phenomena. So I enjoyed that turn that you took with that conversation.
Well, you know, when you listen to a program like this, you know, I mean, different people are going to see things differently. Like, you know, for Joanna, being a vegetarian is very important in her life, and others it may not be. It's not about right or wrong. It's about how you are processing that in your life with the energy flow in your life so you keep yourself at an optimum. And you need to discover that for yourself. That can be different with different people. You know, we have a tendency to want to start moving into judgment if people are doing things different than us. There is nothing that will lower your thought vibration and just shut it down more than judgment. As soon as you move into judgment, you have immediately shut down your energy vibration and your ability to stay on top of it and creative and impulsive and in a place of awareness. So that's why it's important we don't get into judgment. We allow everybody to do it. But what we want to do is do our own individual responsibility to do that own introspection work of what works for us. And you'll know that, because when you're there, life has a flow and a harmony to it. Things just move for you. You don't struggle. The things that you're wanting, they have a tendency to just find you. And you're living in that sense of harmonic flow and balance with an abundance of life that's happening around you. That's what works for you, and that's what you need to find in what that is for you, how that works for you. Because that can be different with every person, because each individual, unique vibration and frequency in a world of energy. So, well, Blanca, okay, back to you.
Well, that's correct. And so I don't want to add to it, because it has been long, and you all had just a great, great conversation. But I think that point is very important. And I think we're at a time when we're observing, and we've talked about this before, when all these institutions, we're seeing that they really are corrupt. They have served their purpose. They no longer are a benefit to our life at all. In fact, they're detracting and they're imposing tyrannical experiences on us. And we're saying, like, no, we don't need that. And the whole, what you brought up in terms of duality and dichotomy and all that, that's also pretty old and pretty tiring. And the way we can resolve that is within our own inner work as well. So anyway, I really enjoyed the conversation. I think that's another point that emerged in your discussion with her.
Yeah. Well, I think what we'll do tonight, because this was a longer program tonight, and we've already been on the air for about an hour and 20 minutes. So I think tonight we're going to bypass taking any comments or questions on the program. Now, if some of you have specific questions, just send me an email, okay? We can do that that way. I'll address your issues with you there. But I think we're going to bypass those on the program because this is going to be a good reference program. This is one that I wanted to have on my website and on my YouTube page as a reference program that can always be back to. People will want to go back to this one as a reference and teaching program. So, okay. Well, anything else then that you want to share with us, Blanca, before we call it a night?
No, I think it was a good show, and hopefully people will be able to attend your workshop because opportunities are looking really good.
That's right. Okay. Thank you, folks, for joining us tonight, and then we should see you next week. Thanks a lot. Okay. Bye-bye.